here. We did allow a little extra time for folks to arrive since lunch ran over downstairs. There are a couple of purple sign-in sheets going around the room, as well as one on the back table, so that you can sign in. Otherwise, I will turn the time to our chair, Nancy Cruick.
Thank you, and we'll call the meeting to order and note officially that the last meeting from March 8th, the recording is posted on the MDAC website, so no need for approving minutes. I'm going to call on Christine Reynolds to give us an update on municipal bond regulatory issues, and I think there are a lot. So,
there are a lot. Thank you, Nancy. There are a handful of the presentation that's going to pop up on the screen here in the back if you want to take one, and it's, of course, available on other publicly available sites, including the MDAC site and the OGFOA website as well. So plenty of resources. For those of you that were in the Hot Topics on Bonds presentation yesterday, I apologize in advance. You'll have heard most of this already, but repeated information is good, right? You learn something new every time. So we'll dive straight in. We're going to try to cover a little bit about the SEC and the MSRB, and also a little bit on bank regulation. Please don't just let me talk if folks have questions. I think an interactive discussion would be informative to hear other folks' experiences. Diving,
Chris,
yes.
To that end, if you'll, since everybody may have heard a lot of it, but let's think about how it affects us in Oregon.
Yes.
Let's just keep tying it to, and what does this mean for MDAC?
Yes, that
okay.
is a very good point. Thank you, Laura. So in summary, with respect to MCDC, there are a number of slides that follow this sort of summary of the settlement and lessons learned that provide the statistics that you see here, talking about the 71 orders that were issued for cease and desist orders among various issuers, and sort of a breakdown of those, notably things applied to both competitive and negotiated sales. And there was information in all of those orders, you know, running the gamut of simple failures to file of, you know, CAFRs, audited financial information, annual financial information. There wasn't really any notes in the settlements about things related to, say, the insurer downgrades. So from applying the lessons learned of the MCDC process, you really, you know, want to review and develop a plan for complying with the required filings for outstanding bonds. And as you're looking for new bonds going forward, what are your requirements in existence, and what are you either adding to or changing in terms of your continuing disclosure requirements? Because the SEC is engaged in this process, they have a lot of enforcement prosecutors on staff. And while MCDC is arguably complete as an initiative, they started to send out notices to folks that filed as issuers, and they are not taking action with respect to those filings. So I do know of some Oregon issuers that have received those letters. And we take that as generally a good sign, but our litigators note that, you know, at this point they're not taking action under MCDC. That doesn't preclude them from choosing to take action in the future in connection with that or anything else.
So what do the letters say?
They're a form letter that say, we received your filing and we're not taking action.
I would note as an issuer, I think one of the pointers that came out of some of the settlements and some of the discussions for issuers is just the really hard push that an issuer needs to have a checklist.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you issue, things you should check quarterly or you should check annually, that you've posted your ongoing disclosure, that is part of your audit checklist, and you can say, yes, I posted it at the appropriate time, and that's the best way to make sure that you don't miss it. And in particular, as you talk about succession planning, I may know I have those disclosures because I'm the person in the office who did the bond issue, and I retire, and somebody else comes in and doesn't know, and it's not on anybody else's checklist, and the disclosure lapses. In a lot of cases, I think that was the situation. It wasn't a purposeful lack of disclosure. It was just nobody knew they were supposed to. So if you are an advisor to an issuer, making sure your issuer has that checklist, something in their process, is probably also important for you to make sure they're doing. Great advice, MCDC. MCDC questions? All right, we'll move forward then. Disclosure is an evolving process, and today's hot topic may be different than tomorrow's. So please, you know, as we've all just sort of talked about here, you know, develop those checklists, look at things with a fresh set of eyes, and be sure to think about things, you know, from a overarching standpoint. There are no stupid questions as you are trying to comply with your disclosure obligation. There are a few reference slides included to ground folks in discussions related to recent SEC cases, so I have some information about the current the federal securities laws that apply, and particularly Rule 10b-5, which is the rule that we all live by in terms of not committing fraud when we are preparing disclosure and making sure that there are no material misstatements or omissions in disclosure documents. Noting also that 10b-5 and that rule of no material misstatements or omissions applies whenever an issuer is speaking to the market, which includes not only a primary offering when you're selling bonds into the market, but your annual reports that you're filing in compliance with your continuing disclosure obligations, and in other circumstances, public officials out speaking to the market in connection with delivering and acting on a budget, talking about what your audit says. Anytime you're in a public meeting, talking about financial obligations and information that you have, if you have publicly offered debt, you have EMMA filings, just consider that you or your board member, commissioner, city council member is effectively making a public statement, and so being sure that folks are thoughtful in what they're saying, and, you know, don't say that the city's budget is going down the toilet and you're going to go bankrupt, because you'll have just spoken to the market. People might be interested in that.
Especially if it's not true.
Especially if it's not true.
If it's true, you got a whole different problem.
Exactly. So current SEC initiatives, as I was noting, there are now 25 attorneys around the country working for the SEC. They are mostly former prosecutors, and right now, given the makeup of the SEC, the absence of a full slate of commissioners, these folks are there. They have a job to do, and until they have commissioners telling them to do something different, they probably are just going to continue to do their job and follow their inclinations as prosecutors and prosecute and enforce the law. So, which is all really to say that right now there is a lot of enforcement action. The next like 14 slides in this slide deck are all providing information about SEC enforcement actions related to disclosure. And so they've been super active. As we talked about in yesterday's session, when you look from the period from 2010 when they started hiring people to now, the number of enforcement actions that we're seeing is growing and evidence of more staff compared to 2010 and historically looking back. They definitely were active, but just not as much so. So moving through the types of enforcement actions that the SEC has pursued, inadequate pension disclosures, folks have all heard about that, and we spend a lot of time talking about pension. It's important. Disclosure of it is important and is really well developed in the state of Oregon. We've got a lot of folks both at the state side and at the local government side that are pension experts. And so, you know, be thoughtful about your pension disclosure, but that is, I think, one area where hopefully as a state we have a good track record both at the state and local level. Other enforcement actions, the city of Miami is a repeat offender and just, you know, failing to disclose everything, false and misleading statements about their interfund transfers, which are hiding general fund problems, CAFR that has a false and misleading information, and then, you know, basic boring things like failures to disclose rating downgrades. Don't be the city of Miami. Just let Florida go do its thing, and in Oregon we'll be good. But that continues the trend also, other false and misleading incomplete financial disclosures. It's not just Miami, Victorville, California, Allen Park, Water District, Town. There's just lots of different examples of failures to provide adequate financial information about what's being financed. Failures of continuing disclosure, lots, again, examples of those, which then led to the MCDC initiative that we discussed.
So lots of examples. Failures failed economic projects and failures to disclose risk is also an area that the SEC is looking at. If you have a project that you're working on financing from an economic development side, you need to be sure you're describing the state of that project, the expected revenues that are coming through that, and what the risks are. Our friends to the north in Wenatchee had problems with that. Again, we should all take the opportunity to learn from the mistakes of others and don't go there. Port Authority of New York, New Jersey is a recent case also really focused on failures to disclose risks. In this case, the risk that certain of the proposed uses of the bond proceeds and other funds might not have been correctly authorized as part of the process. So just, again, think about what you're disclosing and be upfront about any related risks or unknown factors as part of the bond process. Yes?
So clearly there's a difference between intentional misleading and accidental. Like you said, there's a change in staffing. There must have been something in these cases that made the SEC determine that it was intentional as opposed to accidental. Is that correct?
I don't know that they're not making judgments on intent. They're really finding that there's been an absence of material disclosure. So I think, you know, Nancy's point is well taken about the intention, and the same thing held for the MCDC audit or the MCDC process. In all of these cases, the SEC is not focused on intent. They're really focused on you need to provide full and complete information.
I do think, though, so Miami, which has been getting a fair amount of media coverage, got significant fines because of repeated actions that go, you know, were they intentional? It's hard to tell, but it was certainly not a change in staff who didn't know better, who didn't know they had disclosure. These were people who should have known and didn't file. And so I think it becomes less an assignment of guilt and more an assignment of fine amount. It would be where that intent would come down. And they are clearly identifying and pursuing repeat offenders much more than a one-time, one-off, oops, I missed kind of a thing.
So my perspective is that the Port Authority in New York, New Jersey, they crossed the threshold and they started getting into politics. This is just my perspective, not the treasurer's perspective from the treasurer's office. Because I can't, you know, when they start talking about how you use bond proceeds and things, I don't know that that has any material effect on a bondholder other than maybe somebody saying you didn't authorize it legally. But it seems to me that the level of paranoia in the bond community has jumped substantially since the Port Authority in New York, New Jersey, in terms of things that we now have to opine about in terms of bond proceeds. And I think they have a lot of free time on their hands at the SEC, personally. And there's really, to me, if you don't file your forms, and you don't, if you're lying on your CAFR, but this was lawyers trying to decide how they were portraying the use of bond proceeds in New York and New Jersey state governments. And so this is just my personal perspective. I feel like they kind of, I don't know why they did it. Maybe other people know why they did it, but it seems like they chose to wade into a particularly political location.
It's New York and New Jersey. That's why.
But everybody in the whole United States has to now react and go, what does this mean? And so it makes me wonder. No bondholder was injured. No one didn't pay debt service. And so it just is an odd thing to now worry about. And my other comment is in a lot of these places, whether it's Wenatchee or other places, the finance officers were often working for elected officials who do all kinds of political speech and put all kinds of pressure on us as finance officers to do things. And so I think the reality is that those balancing acts are going to get harder and harder for the finance officers in terms of talking to their elected officials about being transparent and honest with finances are not in great places. And so it's just going to make our hard jobs harder. And I'm not saying investors don't have a right to know. They do have a right to know. But, you know, many of these cases, I just sort of smirk and think about how hard it is to tell the mayor, no, you can't build your darn arena. And, you know, what it's like to work in a government where the pressure is on you to do those kinds of projects.
Very true. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Great. Well, moving forward, knowing that we have a limited time and a number of items on the agenda, like I said, the slides are all available in other places, and there's a lot of information in these slides that we talked about in yesterday's Hot Topic session as well as in other venues. I think moving to where we are now, applying all of these lessons and the fact that the SEC is continuing to focus on the municipal market, this just in, there are new amendments proposed, not effective, proposed to Rule 15.12, which is the rule that regulates underwriters and requires that when you do a public offering, you need to provide, as part of that underwritten transaction, commitment to provide ongoing annual disclosure to the market. The rule that is proposed, the amendments to the rule that are proposed, add two new material events to the required list of events that an issuer would provide notices of if they occurred, particularly incurring a financial obligation, which is defined in the proposed rule to mean a debt obligation, lease, guarantee, derivative instrument, or monetary obligation resulting from a judicial, administrative, or arbitration proceeding. And it does not include municipal securities as to which a final official statement has been provided to the MSRB consistent with the rule. So it encompasses a lot of things. It is overly broad in its definition in my view, and I think others' view. It's intended to really capture, among other things, bank license. So I expect that there will be lots of efforts by organizations like OGFOA and NABL, the National Association of Bond Lawyers, hopefully SIFMA, a number of banking organizations to provide written comments to the rule and get the proposed rule revised to be a more proper scope.
So, for example, leases are included. Right now the definition is operating as well as capital. So that would mean every time the state of Oregon entered into a new lease, I'm going to have to meet with somebody to decide whether it's material or not. And multiply that by every community. So the idea was to try and get private placements and financing bank loans, but the way they've defined it is only broad.
Well, I think it's important to note that MDAC has taken the position already that you should be disclosing bank loans in Oregon. That's something that we've wanted and encouraged people to file both with MDAC and with EMMA, if you've got bank loans, to be ahead of that and get that filing out in terms of part of your disclosure. So hopefully we're in a little better shape than some might be.
Yeah, but
if it's just broad.
The word operating lease was in some material that I read that Hawkins had developed already. So I was sort of taken back by whether that was even humanly possible, and the fact that we could be in violation. So.
Oh, yeah. Still up to the individual government to post that. If I just did a bank loan and my mortgage is going to be that, it needs to post that.
Currently, yes. That is correct. Under the rule, there's no legal obligation for you under 15C212 if you have debt outstanding otherwise. There's not an obligation for you to post it, and because it's not a publicly offered transaction, the SEC isn't regulating the bank directly in that case in the same way they do an underwritten publicly offered transaction that would require continuing disclosure. So the voluntary notice under EMMA is filed currently.
But as Nancy said, we, through MDAC, through our biennial debt verification this past year or two, we've been trying to get folks to put it into the MDAC database so that we have investors have a more comprehensive view, particularly if you pledge property taxes, so that when you do an overlapping debt report, you can say, well, what are all the obligations that could be touching that same stream of property taxes?
Okay, so putting it on your form isn't...
what they'd expect you to do is file it through Emma in the future. And if it was just what you did, it'd be fine, but try and imagine every time your public works people enter into a lease.
Right.
Or what if they bought, like, a fire truck or, I mean, operating lease is just operating lease. It's crazy, crazy broad.
Jennifer, did you have a question?
Yeah, it was related. I think we reported to you guys or we moved and we
sure.
saw one bank loan, and they're called out in our CAFR. So I guess I made a naive assumption that because it's called out in the CAFR and we're filing that we're doing that. But you're saying as a separate disclosure, as if it wasn't.
And
do you recommend that we go backwards then and do late filing? I mean, would it even be, it would be a voluntary filing?
It's a voluntary filing, and I will say we filed, I think we've got two bank loans, and we did post them late, but it was because it's voluntary, it wasn't exactly late. And Emma's not exactly set up for that. Because, of course, they want QSIPs for everything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so part of our, and we were one of the earlier ones in terms of posting hours, so we ended up having a lot of conversations with people at Emma saying, how do we post this? We don't have QSIPs on a bank loan, and you want everything filed by QSIPs. And so we started having conversations also about when you look at Emma on the city of Corvallis, we're listed as Benton County, City of Corvallis, Benton County, City of Corvallis, Benton, County of Oregon, and it will be the same issue in like 17 different iterations. You know, how do we get this cleaned up? So they are aware that there are some issues with Emma, and they are working to make the bank loan filing easier and not require the QSIPs, but the rest of it in terms of our ability to go in and clean up stuff and, you know, how long do you leave as if it's an active borrowing, something that you closed 5 years ago, paid off? So, you know, no real way to go in and say this is not a valid draw on our resources anymore. You can tell that by looking, but you kind of have to dig into it. So there is a lot of need for Emma to improve.
And Jonas talked about that yesterday during our other session. He's been, GFOA's been working with them to that end, and they're going to be adding a bank disclosures tab. I'm not sure how it's all working given the QSIP issue, which is an active issue as well, but it's really important. Right now, 15C212 and any other regulation related to you filing anything on Emma does not require you to file anything related to your bank loan. There, obviously, MDAC, we're looking for things on the internal reporting side, which is different, and so there are multiple different layers of reporting, and just because something's in a CAFR wouldn't satisfy this rule as it currently is proposed. If you in the future entered into a bank loan and this rule was in effect, you'd have to post that separately as a material event notice.
Right, but if you've got an official statement potentially in your future, you know, down the line, doing things like this, I'm inferring,
I think we're ahead of the curve in that we knew this was coming, and so getting folks used to looking in for those capital leases.
Yes.
I feel like Emma will work itself out, we'll have QSIP numbers. I'm more worried about operating leases, and I'm also worried about it being a material event that you have to stop everything every time somebody does anything in your government and file, or else you're going to be running a fall again. So, again, it's that feeling like they want to know everything about everything, and again, the idea is it material? Does it matter if you bought, you know, a copier? Probably not, but you're going to have to stop a finance officer and call somebody and go, is this material or not?
Well, and is it one copier, or is it all of the copiers
exactly.
that the state has, which, if you combine them all together, maybe it's material, maybe it's not. You'd have to get that.
And for every community, it's going to be different. It may be material in a small fire district. So it's just adding layers and layers of compliance and complexity that we haven't seen before.
Oh, yep. Oh, where?
Eric.
Oh. I didn't see anything.
As debt manager, I don't know what the park bureau is doing with respect to buying mowers. for example, maybe you leave it somewhere without being asked to report it. You know, and that would be really helpful about that. But the other point I wanted to make was, I hate to see, I believe we need to start reporting bank loans, period. It's coming, so you might want to use it. And what I've seen from CAPRs is they tend not to put as much information about bank loans in there as I think the market's expecting to see. So the filing you end up making for HEMA should be a lot more detailed in terms of the security, acceleration, condition, et cetera. But, we're disclosing bank loans now. We went back and disclosed everything that we've done previously.
So quickly moving through a few other slides about continuing disclosure that are available. The last topic on my section of the agenda is a brief note about ongoing bank regulations for the banking side of the world. FINRA has been undertaking a number of bank examinations for firms, so the broker-dealers and banking firms that you work with as issuers, with respect to bank loans and other alternative financings, and also just examining more closely diligence files and the processes that banks are involved with in terms of municipal financing. So something to be aware of that you'll likely start to see more questions coming to you from your banking counterparts that you're working with on either bank loans or on publicly offered transactions. And internally, I think banks are working on developing strong policies and procedures related to these matters and in response to the ongoing examinations from FINRA, so you may find yourself having more questions asked as a matter of diligence or as a matter of the documentation of bank loans, and some of that is coming out of the regulatory examination of banks. With that, I was also supposed to mention, I just realized, the other late-breaking thing is that in addition to the MSRB proposing changes to Rule 15C, or the SEC in that case, proposing changes to Rule 15C212, the MSRB is also looking at making some amendments with respect to CUSIP numbers and how they're assigned and possibly having a role in private placements, so relating back to our discussion about bank loans. Stay tuned for CUSIP number updates as well. In addition to the SEC enforcers being board, apparently the MSRB is board as well.
Okay, I'm going to throw out the $15 question.
Yes.
If Congress ditches Dodd-Frank, does MCDC and all of this go away? Oh, I didn't tell you I was going to ask that either.
Ditches Dodd-Frank? No. Because, I mean, it ditches the Tower Amendment? Yes, because then they're going to start to try to regulate us all directly. I mean, the regulatory stuff on the Dodd-Frank side is really regulating more of the bankers and not truly 15C212. So from an ongoing disclosure compliance standpoint, you're not getting out of continuing disclosure. And to Eric's point, and all of our points, disclosing bank loans is a good process. So develop your procedures early and often, even with the trend to deleting all regulations from existence or every two for one.
We'll be the last bastion of regulation.
Yeah, right.
Even when corporate regulation goes away.
Got it. Somebody's got to do it. Any more questions on that? We'll turn to Martha.
So the first thing I'd like to say is, in addition to the OTFOA sign-in sheet, I'm going to circulate for MDAC sign-in sheet because we also maintain, we've attended the MDAC annual meeting. If you would, as it goes around the room, please just leave it at the end of one of the end chairs. There's going to be four copies of it. The meeting packet this meeting is 163 pages of important, valuable information and resources. So if you would like to have, I didn't kill trees by printing a lot of handouts, but if you would like a copy of the MDAC board meeting packet, put your email address on the sign-in sheet and we'll come to you. So I'm going to on the topic that I'm here for, the enhancements to the existing system for MSRB MF. It has a section in here that has some instruction sheets that I took off of their website for bank loan disclosure solutions. That I assist you with stepping through that. And the other thing is that they have recently, of course, since their inception, I think in 2007, there have been many improvements to the MS system. But as the most recent ones was the bank loan submission, and also is a new issue listing for municipal securities. It's good for, the listing will show recently sold issues, and also some upcoming ones, which is great for investors to be able to recognize. So, that we have also Denise Harvey, who is participating on the MSRB Insurance 2.0 project, and they started a large-scale project aiming at improving the Internet of Disability. It's been conducted by a third party at Bentley University. Amy Harding is one of our, is from the debt management staff, and she is participating in each study. The first phase was conducted in mid-February, and the second is going to be done between March 20th and March 27th. So Jenny's asking that if anyone has any input, questions, or suggestions, please contact her at the debt management division. So we'd be glad to communicate that. Thank you.
Any questions or comments? Okay. So I have next up legislative session and bills happening in the current session. If you have the packet, we have a whole stack of bills in here. Many of these have had not much action for many of these. From some people's perspective, that's probably good. So just in terms of where bills were this morning when I was checking, House Bill 2132, which allows the local government to issue bonds for energy storage kinds of things, so your ability to put in a big solar array and borrow to do that, has had a public hearing, and nothing else so far. That would be advantageous, I think, in a lot of communities that are wanting or need to maybe get match monies for an energy grant or want to be able to produce and put in place a sizable solar array. It's probably beneficial to the state in some of the things that Department of Energy might want to be doing. So that one might move. There is a bill that makes kind of a number of little amendments to local budget law, including that if you have bonds on a May ballot, you can put in your proposed budget for adoption, your estimated debt payments, so that you can go ahead and issue and work off of that, have that money appropriated. That's actually been through the House. That's 2278, and it's now at the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee, so it's one that's moving, and that's beneficial. I would have to say one of my favorites in here is 2627 that allows a sheriff to request a public safety fiscal emergency if the county as a whole is in fiscal distress and have the state come in and do certain activities. That one hasn't moved yet. That's a little bizarre. House Joint Resolution 1, which has a flip side bill of Senate Joint Resolution 3, is for property tax reform. The Senate Joint Resolution has had a couple of public hearings. This is coming out of a small work group that has been working through the League of Oregon Cities over the last year with Legislative Revenue Office to try and build to something that would get to more significant property tax reform. The sad part is what seems to be coming out of that at this point is a legislative desire, Senator Mark Cass is leading it, to move to real market value with a homestead tax exemption of some kind and a hardline target that it's revenue neutral. to local governments. So the last we were, and I will say during this conversation, we've moved from the homestead tax exemption of $10,000 to $50,000 to $200,000, which we all know in some communities would mean you'd have no property taxes at all. And in Portland, you know, probably doesn't cause people to sneeze much. They would set real market value and then basically re-black box everybody's tax rate to get you to revenue neutral. So your tax rate would go up or go down most likely, depends on that homestead exemption impact. But you would get exactly the same amount of money. We had pushed hard for going with the real market value, basically ditching Measure 5 limits or at least pushing them up. We had talked quite in depth about having minimum tax rates. So all counties would have a minimum of say, $2. All school districts would be required to levy $5 if you were keeping Measure 5 limits in there to try and get to at least equal local funding for schools and the state funding. Those don't seem to be concepts moving forward at this point. And a hard push that we'd had in the bill was the ability to 2 years after a reset to real market value for local governments to go out on a periodic basis and seek an increase in their tax rate. That also doesn't seem to be moving forward at this point. So we're kind of at the point where we're hoping the bill doesn't move much further. If it's going to stay at this rate, and maybe we get a pushback for a little more study, maybe with some legislators who don't, I think, understand the need for local governments to do something different, and certainly the lack of recognition that over 20 years communities have changed in some arenas very significantly, and the inability to get permanent revenue increases means you may have a community that needs a fire department and they can't fund it. You can't fund a fire department on a 5-year renewable levy. So that one we're hoping for. Really not touching bonds in that, which is a good thing, other than what you would get, which would be a reset of a bond rate based upon a higher real market value. There's been a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 9 about the merger of school districts, where they would keep the separate tax rates for the pre-existing district areas as opposed to what the law calls for now, which is a merged rate applied to everybody in the district. That's a pretty focused bill. There's a Senate Bill 530 that creates an Oregon Shipping Authority as an independent public corporation, which personally I have an issue with. It's an independent public corporation, but you're still not paying property taxes. Please, if you're independent, pay taxes. But that's my side point. Anyway, this is really tying in a lot of Port of Portland kinds of issues. There's a push for kind of some regionalization, but there's also language in the bill that requires the Port of Portland to give over their Terminal 6 to this new Port Authority. So it's not moving. It's clearly trying to address an issue, but I'm not sure it's an issue. Anyway, the last one, Senate Joint Resolution 31, large cities could form a joint city-county operation for the parts of the county that city is in. So you can look at, Portland and Multnomah County, and Multnomah County would become just the parts that are not in Portland, and Portland could be, Portland City and County of Portland is their own thing. That one also is not moving, and I'm not really sure what the problem is that one's trying to solve, but anyway, that's what I've got for today. Do you have something else?
Well, there's a bill, 2086, that also addresses fiscal distress in communities and authorizes cities, counties, special districts to file for bankruptcy under federal bankruptcy law. That last time the federal bankruptcy law came, I went and met with the person who proposed it and suggested that it would hurt all the credit ratings of every other community in the state. And I think that if that bill gets some legs, I'm hoping there's others besides me who are willing to go fall on my sword and talk to legislators, because while there's some benefits to do reorganization for the individual community, it will change the credit outlook of every single community in our state. So just, I think you all should keep an eye on 2086.
Although I will say there are times I thought if we could all declare bankruptcy, we could all get out of the PERS unfunded liability.
That hasn't really proven terribly successful for most people.
No,
so.
it hasn't.
In
not
California, actually. If you want to get out of PERS, you have to do a forward future value payment of all of what your future liability is.
Yeah.
So there's a poison pill.
Which is what they would do here as well.
You'd
so.
Have to, because if you left, then everybody else would shoulder your PERS burden. So it's kind of not really a solution, but it could put a pretty big taint on everyone's credit. Plus, the state's guaranteeing school district bonds, and I don't think we'd want to guarantee any more district bonds if they thought they could welch and gain back the school district bonds that we guaranteed. So it could upset our finance system in our state.
As a firm, we certainly have some experience working with municipalities in bankruptcy, so if it does move, we'll be in touch.
Good. Does anybody else have any bills they're following that we ought to hear about? Or I will say I love OLIS for the ability to get a ting being when something is going to be scheduled. And
I had a question about, we were hearing rumors a while back about fire district and school districts proposing urban renewal legislation.
I was just muttering, there is an urban renewal bill that's out there that people have been looking at. I can't remember.
I didn't think it had moved yet.
I've gotten a couple of AORA alerts about it. 2470. It was scheduled for a hearing on March 13th. Well, it's been moved to March 13th. It was originally scheduled earlier. It proposes, according to AORA, this is according to the Association of Oregon Redevelopment Agencies, House Bill 2470 poses a serious threat to local urban renewal by requiring that each urban renewal board include a member from each overlapping taxing jurisdiction. Further requires that any urban renewal plan must be approved by any affected overlapping taxing district. It's currently before the House Committee on Economic Development and Trade, and from an urban renewal agency perspective, there are a variety of concerns that they have about it.
So the only other bills that I've seen, I couldn't quote you what their numbers are, is a couple different special districts being created to do something. So one is to do, I guess, a highway between Wilsonville and Washington County.
Hmm.
I don't know that it says that, but it's sort of like the idea is to look at tolling and transportation districts. Martha listened in on a bill for me about a transit districts being able to impose property taxes. I think it's sort of in the central Oregon area that some of the transit districts don't have that ability. So voters can vote to allow their districts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw there's another one to do something to replace the Hood River White Salmon Bridge. So I'm seeing like little sort of things that are kind of unique to little areas where they want to look at new ways of financing. But I don't know that there's sort of a broader overarching theme at this point. That's about it.
Okay. And then to that end, we've been talking about having a legislative concepts task force for developing any bills that we might want to take forward in the 2018 short session. So if you are interested in volunteering for that committee, you can send me an email, or you can send an email to Laura or to Martha and just throw your hat in the ring as being interested in working on any potential that we would like to offer up as legislation.
And unfortunately, there were some things that came up. I think Carol McCook and others had some thoughts, but we just didn't have our act together, and so by the time it was starting to formulate, we had missed the filing deadline. And so I think we kind of need to keep, particularly the bond attorneys who are kind of aware of hot issues and tweaks, that group kind of needs to give us a lot more advance warning.
I think some of those have some tax issues, federal tax issues as well.
Okay.
So that's crossover refunding side of it.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
So as it is, though, in 18, we in Treasury can't introduce, we're not allowed to introduce on behalf of MDAC. We would need to find a legislator, truthfully, but in 19 for sure. But if it's a hot issue, I'm sure we could find the chair of House Revenue, for example, generally is very open if there's things we want to do. So if that's the hot issue, then, you know, I think we got to get our lawyers developing it. So.
Okay. So, again, drop an email if you're interested in participating. We're open to getting some ideas. And then, Martha, back to you for MDAC support.
Thank you. Another task force that's coming together is, you might have been out on our website and seen the Oregon Bond Education Center. It's a multi-chapter manual about issuing bonds in Oregon, specifically for municipalities. So, and it's time for it to be updated. We want to start working through it for updates. So we have an invitation out for anyone who would like to be on that task force, specifically a special invitation to bond attorneys, because there are a lot of online sites and references like that that really need to be delved into. So please let us know if you have interest in that. The last piece of this topic is about the Bond Tracker, which is our debt management system, the database that maintains all of the information about your debt. It is going through some upgrades. The one thing was that we brought it in-house. The server that it's on now is in-house instead of being external. And the other thing is that an accounts receivable module has been developed, so that when you pay your fees, it also logs right into the bond tracker instead of being a separate system that we keep track of the revenues. There's lots more to come, but that's all that is on the nearby target.
So we're up to other business. I would note for the record, this would have been Lori Steele's last meeting, but she couldn't participate today. We've appreciated her service. We do have Dick Philly sitting in, who is hoping to be appointed. He's the 2 months at Douglas County. Is that what you were saying? You've been.
I'm the rookie guy.
He's the rookie guy. So he'll get his feet wet with MDAC.
Still hoping to get a key to the men's bathroom.
Lucky.
Yeah. Not going to happen. Is there any other business to come before the MDAC? Anybody wants to raise anything that wasn't on the agenda today? Anybody on the phone wanting to say anything?
Nancy, this is Paul Matthews.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we shouldn't just take a roll call of the commission so we know who has attended.
Oh. Certainly. So,
Christine Reynolds, here.
Paul Matthews.
Yeah, I'm here.
Javier Fernandez.
I'm here.
Doug Middlesetter.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
And Laura Lockwood McCall.
And Laura Lockwood McCall for the record. So we did have a quorum. We are all here except for Lori. So anything else before the MDAC? Then we'll close the meeting and you get a little bit longer break before the afternoon session. Thank you all.
Good job.
Thanks, everybody.
Your conference is ending now, as requested by the host. Please hang up.